Hello and welcome to the Verity Podcast for Thursday, March 14th, 2024. We're the only podcast that's separating the fact from the narrative spin. I'm Adam Clark.
And I'm Eric Steiner. Here's a look at today's top stories. Trump and Biden both clinch party nominations for a November showdown.
The former chief of staff to Alexei Navalny is assaulted in Lithuania.
Vladimir Putin says Russia is ready for nuclear war.
Several are dead after violence flares in the West Bank.
Kenya pauses its UN policing mission to Haiti.
The House passes a bill to ban TikTok unless the platform is sold.
Six counts are dismissed against Trump and his allies in the Georgia election case.
An appeals court says the FTC can reopen a Meta privacy case.
An open letter from 55 academics criticizes the UK COVID inquiry.
And RFK Jr. is reportedly considering Aaron Rodgers and Jesse Ventura as his running mate.
In our top story, Biden and Trump both clinched the 2024 presidential nominations. Here are the facts as agreed upon by the Associated Press, NPR Online News, Truth Social, X, and Real Clear Polling. President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump on Tuesday each clinched their party's respective races, confirming the first presidential rematch since 1956 this November. Trump, with 1,249 pledged delegates, surpassed the required 1,215 delegates required to win the Republican nomination on Tuesday, following primary victories in Georgia, Hawaii, Mississippi, and Washington. Biden, with 2,107 pledged delegates, also reached the 1,968 delegate requirement Tuesday after also winning Washington, Georgia, and Mississippi, as well as the Northern Mariana Islands. In a post on social media platform Truth Social, Trump wrote, quote, "It's a great honor to secure the GOP nomination," while he also claimed he'll be running against the, quote, "worst, most incompetent, corrupt, and destructive president in U.S. history." In a statement on X, formerly known as Twitter, Biden wrote he's honored to be the Democratic nominee for the second time. He also characterized Trump's campaign as one of, quote, "resentment, revenge, and retribution." According to Real Clear Polling's data averages as of March 13th, Trump, with 47.3%, held a lead of 1.8% over Biden's 45.5%, having maintained a lead since October 2023.
Eric, thanks for starting off our first story with the facts. I'm going to start the first round of narrative spins. We're going to begin with a pro-Trump narrative, and it's brought to us by The Last Refuge. Following a series of dominant victories, Trump has finally been confirmed as the man who will fight for Republicans and Americans nationwide. Despite the best attempts of the corporate elite to find an alternative candidate, the will of the people could not be ignored. Now it's time for Trump to finish the job.
Huffington Post counters that with a Democratic narrative. Although Biden is slightly behind in the polling, the American public will soon become more aware of his accomplishments and why he's a better choice than Trump. Among Biden's achievements are a solid economic recovery, a crucial infrastructure bill, a long-awaited cap on insulin prices, and supporting women's reproductive health.
There's also a cynical narrative thrown under these spins, and it's brought to us by USA Today. The American system has provided its citizens with two presidential candidates who inspire a little excitement. The U.S. would be better off if a new era of politicians took the reins. With little to celebrate about either party's nominee, America will have to wait another 4 years to see any real change.
And Metaculus is going to wrap up this round of spins with their nerd narrative. They say there's a 50% chance that Donald Trump will be elected U.S. president in 2024.
Ew, wow, that's real daring choice there. 50% chance.
I know.
Thanks for your opinion.
These risky statistics are really stabbing me in the side, Metaculus.
Talk about walking the razor's edge.
I don't see how they do it.
Navalny ally Leonid Volkov has been attacked in Lithuania. Here are the facts as agreed upon by New York Times, Fox News, Novaya Gazeta, Al Jazeera, LRT, and RT International. Leonid Volkov, the former chief of staff to the late Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny, was physically assaulted in the Lithuania capital Vilnius on Tuesday. According to his associates, Volkov was taken to a hospital after someone broke a window of his car, sprayed tear gas into his eyes, and allegedly hit him with a hammer. Volkov detailed the assault in his Telegram channel on Wednesday, revealing that he was hit some 15 times in the leg with a meat tenderizer and had his arm broken. The Lithuanian intelligence service related the attack, which President Gitanas Nausėda claimed to be premeditated and in line with other provocations against his country in the upcoming presidential election in Russia. Volkov resigned as chairman of Navalny's Anti-Corruption Foundation, or the FBK, last year after signing a letter on its behalf without consulting his colleagues, urging the EU to lift sanctions on businessman Mikhail Fridman. Living in the EU since 2019, Volkov was put on Russia's international wanted list 3 years ago on charges of enticing minors to participate in unauthorized protests, as well as to the country's terrorism and extremism watch list.
Adam, thank you for the facts. The first spin for this story is coming from Politico. It's an anti-Russian narrative. That Volkov was attacked as Russia prepares for a rigged presidential election that will certainly grant Putin a renewed term in office is no surprise, particularly given that the Kremlin spares no efforts to crack down on the opposition. While this operation in Lithuania was designed to serve as a warning to dissidents at home, it further reasserts that Russia is at war with the West.
That's going to be countered with a pro-Russia narrative provided by Global Research. It's no coincidence that the West insists on pointing fingers at the Kremlin and Putin personally over anything that happens to people in the opposition camp, as its propaganda machine is now at full tilt to try to divert focus from defeats in Ukraine and the genocide in Gaza. If Western countries did live up to what they preached, Julian Assange, for example, wouldn't be subject to torture for exposing the U.S.'s ruthless killings.
Metaculus' nerd narrative says there's a 50% chance that Vladimir Putin will cease to hold the office of President of Russia by March of 2029. You know what? I have always thought the quarter flip would be kind of cliche, but not with Metaculus. They are spot on. Russia says it's ready for nuclear war, Putin says. The facts are agreed upon by Reuters, Independent, CNN, and Politico. In an interview with Russian media ahead of the country's elections commencing on Friday, Russian President Vladimir Putin said that the country is technically ready for a nuclear war should it break out, but added that he doesn't see the world rushing in that direction. The remarks were presented by English-speaking media as a nuclear threat to the West and more saber-rattling on the part of the Russian leader. However, the comments came in response to a question asking whether Russia was really ready for a nuclear war should one break out. Quote, from a military technical point of view, we are, of course, ready, Putin said. Putin added, apart from U.S. President Joe Biden, there are enough other experts in the sphere of Russian-American relations and strategic restraint. So I don't think that everything is going to go head-on here, but we are ready for it. Putin also included a warning that if the U.S. were to deploy troops in Ukraine or Russia, it would be an escalation, and that, quote, this is how we will treat it. However, he said this is unlikely. Biden again ruled out the prospect last week after it was floated by Emmanuel Macron. Putin also reiterated that Russia is prepared to enter into negotiations to bring about an end to the war in Ukraine. However, he stated these cannot be, quote, based on some desires after the use of psychotropic drugs, but based on the realities that have developed, as they say in such cases, on the ground.
Eric, thanks for the facts. The spins are going to begin with Politico telling us the pro-establishment narrative. Ahead of Russia's sham elections where the autocrat is all but guaranteed to be reelected, Putin is once again threatening the West with the use of nuclear weapons, demonstrating once again his gangster tactics in an effort to exert his influence.
Reuters has narrative B. Putin's specific remarks were in response to a direct question about whether Russia was really ready to use nuclear weapons if they were needed. He reiterated Russia's long-standing nuclear doctrine that states such weapons can only be used if the existence of the Russian state was under threat, something he said is unlikely.
The nerds have an opinion. They think that there's a 20% chance that a nuclear weapon will be detonated as an act of war by 2050, and that's according to the Metaculus prediction community.
I'm not sure what to do about this 20% thing. I mean, what happened to 50?
They have less of an opinion.
Yeah, that was great, Adam. Why don't you talk much and practice before we do this podcast?
First day with a new tongue. Sorry, still working it in. Reports out of the West Bank where several are dead in Israeli raids. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Al Jazeera, Middle East Monitor, The Times of Israel, and Reuters. Israeli forces conducted multiple raids across the West Bank on Wednesday, killing at least four Palestinians. One incident occurred at the Shufat refugee camp, where Israel said Rami al-Hahouli, 13, shot fireworks at them, prompting them to shoot and kill him. Witnesses, however, told Al Jazeera that the boy was not firing the fireworks at the soldiers, but rather up in the air. They reportedly showed the outlet video footage confirming these series of events. Another man said the Israeli forces fired upon people who were sitting outside a hospital in the city of Jenin, adding that those who crawled were saved, and those who ran away got injured. Elsewhere, a 15-year-old suspect was killed after he purportedly attempted to stab an Israeli military police officer and private security guard at a military checkpoint between Jerusalem and Bethlehem. Israeli raids were also reported in the town of Anabada and the village of Barines, where a 35-year-old man was wounded. Israeli police said they also engaged people throwing Molotov cocktails, prompting them to shoot five men near Al-Jib, killing a 16- and 23-year-old. According to the UN, Israel has expanded its raids in the West Bank since Hamas's October 7th attack, killing at least 358 people. A quarter of them were minors.
Adam, thanks for presenting the facts. The round of spins begins with a pro-Palestine narrative. It's coming from Middle East Eye. Israeli troops have no care for the lives of Palestinians, even children, and their government has no desire to hold them accountable. This was shown by National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir's praising of the soldier who killed the 13-year-old boy and arguing that he should not be investigated for his actions. Even with video footage debunking the claim that the boy shot fireworks at Israeli forces, those who killed him will face no punishment. The international community must start holding Israel accountable for its crimes.
The Foundation for Defense of Democracies is going to counter that with a pro-Israel narrative. The Israeli government is not lying about terrorist threats in the West Bank. Ahead of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, which has since begun, a spokesman for the Palestinian Islamic Jihad called for this year's holiday to be, quote, a month of terror, and for terror groups to, quote, unify against Israel. Palestinian terrorists have certainly heeded this message, returning to old tactics of suicide bombings in civilian venues, such as buses and cafes. Israeli forces are responding to militants, not innocent civilians, pointing weapons at them.
And Metaculus has a nerd narrative as well. They say there's a 50% chance that there will be at least 724 Palestinian fatalities in the West Bank caused by Israeli forces before July 2024. The latest in Haiti as Kenya pauses the UN policing deployment. Here are the facts as agreed upon by New York Times, Business Insider, Al Jazeera, the official website of the President of Haiti, Citizen Digital, and The Independent. The Kenyan government decided on Tuesday to halt its long-planned deployment of 1,000 police officers to Haiti as part of a UN security mission after Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry announced that he would resign. The Kenyan Foreign Ministry argued that, given the, quote, critical ground situation following the latest political events and spiraling gang violence in the country, security forces could only be deployed if there is a constitutional authority in Haiti. Following a summit of Caribbean countries in Jamaica on Monday, Henri announced that his government would resign once a transitional council is appointed. Unelected Henri has led Haiti since the assassination of his predecessor in 2021. To tackle the rampant crime and violence in the Caribbean nation, Kenya and Haiti signed a, quote, reciprocal agreement on March 1st, tasking the East African country with leading a multinational law and order mission approved by the UN Security Council last year. Reacting to the Kenyan decision, the U.S. Department of State on Tuesday expressed concern about any delay in sending Kenyan police forces to Haiti, adding that a transition should take place, quote, in the very near future to allow for the mission to go forward without delay. Much of Haiti's economy, as well as the capital, Port-au-Prince, is controlled by armed gangs who recently launched a wave of attacks on police stations, prisons, and other government buildings. Dozens have been killed and about 15,000 displaced due to the violence.
Thank you, Eric. We're going to start the spins with a pro-establishment narrative provided by BBC News. Although the Kenyan government's decision is understandable, there's no need to delay the deployment of its police forces. Washington will ensure that a transitional council is set up in the next few days, which will then appoint an interim prime minister, paving the way for free and fair elections in Haiti. Washington has approved $300 million in funding for the security mission and is counting on Kenya to honor its commitment to support Haiti.
The establishment critical narrative comes from UVA Today. UN and U.S.-backed troops have been sent to keep the peace in Haiti before, and things only got worse. Not only did these outside forces establish an unelected leader, but they also mistakenly unleashed cholera on the Caribbean state of 11 million people. Whether this operation leads to a new transition plan or not, the Haitian government has no ability to regain control of its capital, let alone conduct free elections. History is likely to repeat itself here, meaning the safety and economy of Haiti will deteriorate further.
The nerds have a staunch opinion on this subject. They think that there's a 57% chance that Haiti will experience a civil war before 2036, and that's according to the Bitaculous prediction community.
They threw in an extra 7% to throw us off. See what they did there?
They're playing with us, Eric.
They are playing with us, I know.
The U.S. House of Representatives passes a bill to ban TikTok unless it is sold. Here are the facts as agreed upon by New York Times, Associated Press, Reuters, USA Today, and Fox News. The Republican-majority U.S. House on Wednesday passed by a vote of 352-65, a bill forcing ByteDance, the China-based owner of TikTok, to sell the social media platform within 6 months, or face a ban in the U.S. Lawmakers who passed the bill in a bipartisan manner generally believe TikTok is a threat to national security, fearing ByteDance is beholden to the PRC and its national security laws, compelling companies to assist with intelligence gathering. TikTok, which boasts 170 million users in the U.S., in a statement, lamented that the House, quote, jammed through the bill in secret and expressed hope the Senate will, quote, consider the facts before passing the bill. Although Democratic President Joe Biden, who this week secured the party's nomination for the 2024 election, said he would sign the bill, it faces challenges in the Senate, where there have been questions about the legality of focusing on only one company. The House bill passed days after former President Donald Trump, who will be the Republican nominee in this year's election, voiced his opposition to the ban. Trump, as president, issued an executive order banning the platform, but it was challenged in court.
Adam, thank you for those facts. This first spin is an anti-China narrative coming from Fox News. ByteDance must divest TikTok, or it must be banned because it's a national security threat to the U.S. The Chinese Communist Party has cleverly created a platform with addictive algorithms that can easily manipulate the minds of the millions of Americans using it. It's so bad that it's even banned in China. So there's no reason why the U.S. should be allowing China to access Americans' minds and data.
That's going to be countered by Global Times with the pro-China narrative. It's laughable how the U.S. claims it stands for free speech and fair competition, but then its politicians pass a bill that's the equivalent of political robbery. U.S. lawmakers have convicted TikTok of being a national security threat despite not having 1 ounce of evidence. They're willing to deny millions of their citizens access to a platform they love in the name of scoring political points. Free speech and the rule of law are dead in the U.S.
Metaculous's nerd narrative says there's a 13% chance that TikTok will be sold to a U.S. entity before 2025.
Not if I have anything to say about it.
What do you think, if it's purchased by a U.S. company, what do you think they would change the name to?
X.
X, yeah, right, exactly. It'll change to X. Yeah, X 2.0, yeah. A judge dismisses 6 counts against Trump in a Georgia election case. The facts are agreed upon by Washington Post, Fox News, CNBC, Wall Street Journal, and CNN. Fulton County, Georgia Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee on Wednesday removed 6 of the 41 counts in the indictment of former President Donald Trump in the 2020 election interference case against him and 5 co-defendants. The dismissed charges were related to allegations that the Trump administration asked state legislators to create fake presidential electors and urged Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger to decertify the election. McAfee agreed with the defense's claim that the prosecution hadn't specified, quote, the exact term of the oaths that are alleged to have been violated. The judge said the six counts in question, quote, do not give the defendants enough information to prepare their defenses intelligently. The six counts, which McAfee said could be refiled if they are more specific, were filed against Trump, former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, former Trump campaign lawyer John Eastman, and local Georgia lawyers Robert Sheely and Ray Smith. McAfee said the racketeering case will still continue, and his ruling did not mention the ongoing ethics case against lead prosecutor Fannie Willis. McAfee said he would stick to his timeline of making a decision on whether to disqualify her from the case by the end of the week.
Thank you, Eric. The spins are going to start with a pro-Trump narrative provided by Town Hall. Willis just received another reality check regarding her bad faith charges against Trump. Not only has a significant part of her racketeering case been stripped away, but she's also been exposed as a corrupt prosecutor personally profiting from this case. While Trump still faces other counts, this series of losses for Willis looks like the start of Trump's exoneration. This is even more momentum for Trump as November approaches.
Huffington Post has the anti-Trump narrative. Although this is a blow to Willis's case, there are still dozens of serious counts filed against the former president and his colleagues. Trump was captured on audio asking elected officials to find him more votes, and there's a plethora of more evidence proving his co-conspirators tried influencing and harassing officials into helping them overturn the election. This case is still on the road to victory.
But the nerds are on top of this case, and they think that there's a 55% chance that Trump will be convicted of a felony before the 2024 presidential election. And that's according to the Protagonist Prediction Community. A decision from the appeals court where the FTC is able to reopen the Meta privacy case. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Reuters, Digital Watch Observatory, Best Stocks, Republic World, and Benzinga. A U.S. appeals court ruled late Tuesday that the U.S. Federal Trade Commission, or the FTC, cannot be prevented from reopening its investigation into Facebook's privacy unit, dealing a blow to parent company Meta's efforts to freeze the case. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals decision allows the FTC to push for increased measures to tighten a 2020 privacy settlement with Meta, which argued that it had already paid a $5 billion fine and implemented safeguards as part of the deal. The FTC argued it must strengthen its privacy agreement with Meta, citing particular concerns over the protection of minors' data and facial recognition technology. The decision comes as Meta continues its lawsuit fighting the positionality of the FTC's inquiry. The court said that the FTC's privacy concerns are related to vital public interests, adding that Meta will have the opportunity to challenge any final action. Meta argued that the ruling doesn't address the firm's allegations about flaws in assessing privacy violations. The FTC says its previous settlement was not meant to resolve, quote, all claims in perpetuity, and that new compliance and oversight requirements are needed. The FTC is also suing Meta for monopolizing the social media market. The FTC hasn't commented on the ruling, and big tech companies are battling antitrust lawsuits from regulators around the world.
Adam, thank you for the facts. The first spin is Narrative A, coming from the Register. Meta is fighting tooth and nail to prevent the FTC from imposing common sense regulations to protect children's personal data. The Facebook parent company has been under regulatory heat for more than a decade, and it consistently circumvents outdated agreements to grow its profits. The 2020 settlement with the FTC was never intended to be a final agreement, and the FTC has every right to tighten restrictions over time.
Spin's going to continue with a Narrative B provided by Tech Explorer. After Meta paid a $5 billion fine and adhered to the FTC's terms, the regulator is attempting to completely rewrite its settlement with Meta and unconstitutionally impose ridiculous restrictions that would violate the previous agreement. The FTC doesn't have the authority to renege on the terms of its settlement. Meta will continue to fight for fairness and the rights of companies to not have their settlement arbitrarily changed at the hands of bureaucratic agencies.
There's a nerd narrative from Metaculous saying there's a 2% chance that Meta platforms will sell Instagram or WhatsApp before 2025.
2%. And then they're going to sell them and buy TikTok.
That's right. Absolutely. An open letter criticizes the biases of the United Kingdom COVID inquiry. The facts are agreed upon by Collateral Global and The Telegraph. Dr. Kevin Bardash of the University of Edinburgh and Professor Sunetra Gupta of Oxford University wrote a letter accusing the UK government's COVID inquiry of being biased in favor of bereaved family groups and against those who were harmed by pandemic policies. The letter, signed by 55 academics, claims the inquiry lacks neutrality, resulting in predetermined conclusions. For example, to lock down faster next time. It says the government has neglected to hear evidence from victims of pandemic policies or scientists who opposed them. The signatories claim that before 2020, the consensus on non-pharmaceutical interventions, like lockdowns, said such policies were ineffective and could cause substantial harm to society. However, the inquiry assumes that these measures are effective and appropriate. The authors say the inquiry has not seriously questioned the hypotheses and assumptions used by the government, including by modelers whose data supported pandemic policies. They believe the next segments of the inquiry, which they point out has cost an estimated £300 to £500 million, or $383 to $639 million, should include, quote, a much broader range of scientific experts with more critical viewpoints. An inquiry spokesman said the investigation has included opposing scientific views and will continue to do so regarding, quote, the impact of lockdowns, key scientific and policy questions, and health and well-being.
Thanks, Eric. I've got Telegraph here with the establishment critical narrative. Not only has this inquiry ignored world-leading epidemiologists critical of lockdowns, but its treatment of the few it has called upon has been confrontational. COVID infection rates were failing before lockdowns, which shows what little scientific rigor the government has and continues to put into this issue. What's worse, the inquiry didn't originally plan to include the topic of children until parents protested.
Adam, the pro-establishment narrative comes from The Guardian. This inquiry has been rigorous and detailed in its socially and medically focused scientific pursuits. While some still claim that the government did too much in response to the virus outbreak, what this investigation has found is that leaders such as former Prime Minister Boris Johnson were too slow to act and thus left the elderly population at fatal risk. The public health community followed the best available science at the time.
Oh, the nerds are on top of it again, Eric. They think that there's a 50% chance that at least 150,000 people will be reported to have died per year of COVID-19 on average during the years of 2022 to 2025 in the United States. And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. Our last story today is a report that RFK Jr. has been considering Aaron Rodgers and Jesse Ventura as running mates. Here are the facts as agreed upon by CNN, New York Times, Associated Press, One America, and ABC News. Independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the son of former U.S. Attorney General Robert Kennedy and nephew of former President John F. Kennedy, told CNN on Tuesday he will announce the identity of his running mate within the next 2 weeks. This comes as the New York Times on Tuesday reported Kennedy had reached out to NFL quarterback Aaron Rodgers and former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura about the number two slot on his ticket. As the independent candidate, Kennedy has faced challenges that are both expensive and time-consuming in trying to secure a place on many states' ballots. Some states require an independent candidate to name a running mate before they're approved for their ballots. Others among those reportedly on Kennedy's list of potential running mates are former Hawaii U.S. Representative Tulsi Gabbard, Senator Rand Paul, the Republican from Kentucky, and entrepreneur Andrew Yang, who previously ran for president and mayor of New York City. Kennedy, who opted to run as an independent after failing to make headway against President Joe Biden in the Democratic Party, and Rodgers, who currently is a member of the New York Jets, are close friends and are each vocal about their opposition to COVID mRNA vaccines. Ventura and Kennedy share an affinity for alternative theories about what happened to the U.S. on September 11th of 2001.
Thanks, Adam, for the facts. The pro-establishment narrative is the first spin, and it comes from The Guardian. Kennedy continues to run an unserious campaign that's besmirching his family's legacy and could potentially spoil Biden's reelection. Even his relatives oppose his campaign. His ties to Rogers and Ventura are built on conspiracy theories and anti-vaccine sentiments. And this is as dangerous to the country while he's on the campaign trail as it would be if he somehow got elected to the White House.
That's going to be countered with the establishment critical narrative provided by Fox News. Kennedy isn't tarnishing his family's reputation. He's actually carrying on the legacy of what his father and grandfather believed. He should be a spoiler to both Biden and Republican nominee Donald Trump because he wants to beat them in a three-way race, a possibility according to the polls. Independents are a huge voting bloc, and Kennedy is representing those citizens as well.
Our final nerd narrative of today's podcast, coming from Metaculus, says there's a 1% chance that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. will be elected U.S. president in 2024. You're a conspiracy theorist. What do you think is going to happen?
Aaron Rodgers is going to step up to accept his bid for the vice presidential nominee, and he's going to trip and break his ankle.
That's not going to happen because Ventura is going to be standing right there to catch him. So no one's going to fall and trip. No one's
are they going to be co-vice presidents, you think?
Yes, yes,
oh,
they are.
Like a tag team.
Thanks for listening to the Verity Podcast for Thursday, March 14th, 2024.
Each day, we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all the articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
Find out more at Verity.news and download the Verity app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Adam Clark, I'm Eric Steiner, inviting you to join us next time on the Verity Podcast.